Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody. This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from Booger County and the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. And our guest this week is Robert Roskin. And Robert, introduce yourself and tell folks what your internet website address is, and we'll just go from there.
Okay, and actually my wife Julia will be joining us.
Oh, great.
With you too. Our web address is onelovepress.com, uh-huh. And you spell out one, O-N-E, lovepress.com.
And of course, you have Rasta Heart also, don't you?
Yeah, Rasta Heart will take you to the same place. It's Rasta Heart or onelovepress.com.
Right, and I'm glad to get some more people of color on here. We've had Kohain Shalameen on last year, and we Tom Blue Wolf last September came on. He was on his way to South Africa. He was going to visit the Rain Queen Mojeji, who's loved and feared by millions of Africans, one of the most powerful spiritual women on earth. And he was going to visit Credo Mutua, and we just haven't had a chance to get back and have a report. Tom Blue Wolf's pretty busy guy. But, yeah, I wanted to get some, something other than white and red folks on here.
Well, you haven't succeeded with that, Blue Otter, because even though our work has been in Jamaica for 4 years, we're white.
Well, at least we're talking about
That's okay, though, because our work has been in a predominantly, you know, black culture in Jamaica, though now we're starting to work in the United States. But for 4 years, all of our work has been immersed in Jamaica, which is 97% African descendant.
Great. Yeah, we... there's another elder that I just ran into on Nancy Red Star site. He's an Islamic elder out of Chicago, and we're going to try to get him on. And he's an expert on prophecy. I've been looking. It's really hard to find an Islamic who's coming from the black perspective that's going to talk about prophecy. It's hard enough to find an Islamic that's going to talk about prophecy, period. So I'm kind of excited about that interview. So anyway, tell us about your book and yourself and your mission.
Well, our mission started years ago when my wife and I, you know, there's a saying, Blue Otter, that a third of your life to learn, a third of your life to earn, a third of your life to serve. We had entered the third of our life to serve, and we had a small educational video company that gave us enough that we could not have to worry about our finances, and we decided that we wanted to, it was that time of life where we wanted to give back and serve. And we started to write books on unconditional love for all. That would be, in the Jamaican term, it's one love. In Christian terms, it's agape. So we wrote a book called In the Spirit of Business, which is how do you express unconditional love in your work life, which, as you know, can be difficult. Then we wrote a book called In the Spirit of Marriage, which is even more difficult. How do you express unconditional love in your intimate relationships?
Wonderful.
So we were writing the books, you know, when they were published by mid-sized publishers, and we had a, you know, enthusiastic group of readers, never a large group. Because, as you know, one love and unconditional love isn't being sought by the masses at this point. They're all led astray with, you know, all the other things available from the Internet to, you know, TV channels to everything that the society is leading people astray with. So we started to write these books, and we went to Jamaica. We were between books, and we were so taken by the Jamaican message of one love as it was coming from Bob Marley and from other conscious reggae artists. And for the Rastafarians, we decided that we would write a book on the Jamaican version of One Love. So we, on this family trip with our two daughters, we got acquainted with what we thought was a powerful vibration of love coming out of Jamaica. I mean, here's a country that was a slave colony. No country was more abused in history, perhaps, than countries like Haiti and Jamaica, where they wiped out the indigenous population and made it a slave colony. And yet they had birthed a message of one love out of their music, not a message of anger and frustration, which we thought was a miracle that they could have done that. So anyway, we started to go down there to go into the hills and the outskirts of the villages looking for the elder Rastafarians who had mentored Bob Marley, who had brought this message forward. And we wrote our first book, Rasta Heart, A Journey into One Love. And when we put that book out about 3 years ago, we decided we would bring the book into Jamaica and kind of do an intro in Jamaica, and that we would give back to Jamaica by basically starting to do events that mirrored their own message of love back to them. So our first event was when we launched Rasta Heart. We wandered through the country for weeks, and we asked people one simple question: who teaches love in Jamaica on a national level? Who are your national healers? Now, if you ask that in Jamaica, you get 8 or 10 names right off the bat. Now, let me ask you, Blue Otter, who do you think teaches love in the United States on a national level?
Hmm. Not many.
Exactly. If you ask an American...
Red Elk...
No, national. That would be known by, say, 80-90% of the
national
people.
I can't.
Exactly. Now, if you ask a Jamaican that, they'll rattle off 10 names quick. But in the States, you only have two names I ever hear, and that is either Oprah or Billy Graham, depending on whether you're kind of New Age or whether you're old-time religion.
Oh,
so, but in Jamaica, so we went to the, so we got 10, 11 names that everyone agreed on. These were healers. Some were reggae artists. One was a politician running on a love ticket who was for prime minister. One was an author. We went to these people and said, for our book launch, we want to invite everyone to be a healer because everyone's destiny is to be a healer. And everyone will eventually become a healer because that's who we really are. We have been sent here by our Creator to teach and learn one love, unconditional love. So everyone is a latent healer or everyone is an active healer. So we want you to come because you've been named as the active healers to encourage people to become a healer themselves in their little area of Jamaica that they walk. So we got reggae artists, we got this politician, we had a Jamaican senator, and everything. We had our first event, and now 4 years later, we've done 54 concerts in Jamaica, all free,
all
with conscious One Love reggae artists, all through the inner city ghetto schools. So we've gone into Jamaica and brought this message of One Love and reflected it back to them. Some of our concerts, and we always work for free, all the artists perform for free. We take no sponsorship money. We take no government funding for what we do. And we just go in and reflect back this message of love to them. So we've done 54, and some are small. We've gone way up into the hills of Jamaica and done concerts for 15 kids in a orphanage. Our biggest concert was several months ago on Bob Marley's 60th birthday. And for this concert, the government, every year on Bob Marley's birthday, we did public concerts. And they got bigger and bigger and bigger until this year, both Bob Marley's family and the Jamaican government said, we don't want to compete with your concert. We'll put on your concert for you.
Oh,
you
God.
Design the concert. We will provide, we will cordon off downtown Kingston on that Sunday night of Bob's 60th birthday. We'll put theater-sized screens every block for the crowd to see what's going on stage. We'll build a huge stage, and all the TV and radio will cover it, and you and your wife can design the concert. So here is Jamaica,
so you're telling
the Marley family more or less turning Bob's 60th birthday over to this white couple from the hills of North Carolina.
So you're telling me this is bigger in Jamaica than Willie Nelson and Farm Aid ever hoped to be in the United States, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, in Jamaica, Bob Marley is the number one citizen of Jamaica. They celebrate his birthday, Blue Otter, for an entire week.
Oh, my God.
There are billboards all over the island with Bob's smiling face on it that says, One Love, Jamaica's message to the world.
Like
when you get put on hold at a big hotel, you listen to Bob Marley. When you go anywhere in the culture, you see Bob Marley. They celebrate his birthday for a week solid. They play his music on the TV and on radio for that whole week, and even not all during, you know, even during the year. So this concert on his 60th birthday was huge, and we invited all kind of conscious artists, recording artists, and we also invited other known healers in Jamaica to join us on stage that night and ask all of Jamaica to heal the little piece that they were assigned. So we reminded people, look, you're not going to be able to stop the World Bank debt. You're not going to stop the IMF. You can't stop the war in Iraq, and you can't fill every pothole in Jamaica. What you can do is what you were assigned to do. Take the instructions that we were given to love each other and simply heal the little piece of Jamaica that you have been assigned. And if you do that, you will go to bed at night, at peace that you have done your assignment. And what the other 6 billion people do, including George Bush and Tony Blair and the corrupt politicians in Jamaica, is between them and their creator. You just have to do your assignment according to your instructions. And this was the message that we brought over and over into the school system and then into these big concerts, reminding people that this is what's asked of each one of us. And that when you do that, our message is that if you go any other path, but a path of love and forgiveness, you go astray. You're not going home. You're not becoming who you were meant to be. So if you go into revenge, if you go into anger, if you go into materialism, if you go into sex, if you go into accomplishments, if you go into vanity, all those are going to go astray, and your life is going to reflect it. And you know that, and I know that. We've all seen it. But when you turn home, your life from wherever you're at becomes better and better and better because you are becoming who you were meant to be and you are heading home. We just did concerts in the Iroquois Nation 3 weeks ago, and we did one concert to 690 inmates in a prison. And we told them, you have been sent behind these prison walls to learn and to teach one love. You are not prisoners unless you tell yourself you are. And no matter how bad your life has been, no matter what was done to you in your past, and no matter what you've done in your past, maybe you've hurt, perhaps even killed people, maybe you were abused as a child, that you can turn back home. And as you turn back home and you start to love and forgive, your relationships will get better, your health will get better, your own peace of mind will get better. So we brought this message to Harvard University. We brought this message to prisoners in New York. We brought it to the Havasupai Indians at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. We brought it to the Prime Minister of Jamaica. It's the same message. And these conscious reggae artists sing this message. Now, in the U.S., we have to bring, Blue Otter, conscious musicians from Jamaica to do our concerts that we now do in the U.S. We're now doing concerts throughout the Indian reservations, the Hopi, the Havasupai, the Iroquois. We're doing them at some colleges. We just did Syracuse, 7 free concerts in their inner city schools, in their prisons, public concerts up there. In 2 weeks, we head to the Havasupai Reservation at the bottom of the Grand Canyon, where we do our second concert, helicoptering into the bottom of the canyon, where there are 700 Native Americans and a Havasupai tribe on the Hopi Reservation. And it's always the same message. But we have to bring Jamaican conscious artists, because in our culture, there aren't many conscious artists. A conscious artist is someone who is aware of why we are on this planet. So in our culture, all of our artists talk about either alienation or sexuality or vanity or materialism or whatever.
By the way,
in Jamaica, you have 30 or 40 recording artists, internationally known reggae recording artists, who sing of love and equality and forgiveness. And so we travel often with Abby Jah, who's a very conscious artist out of Jamaica. We've done 72 concerts now with Abby Jah. We also work with other well-known reggae artists like Bunny Wailer from Bob Marley and the Wailers, Culture, Luciano, President Brown. These are the top reggae artists. And we invite them to, when we do these events, and say, come and bring your message into the ghetto schools. Come and bring it into Harvard. Come and bring it into a Native American reservation with a free concert to the people. So that's what we do, and we've written 2 books about our Jamaican experience, which is Rasta Heart, and the second book is called The Gathering of the Healers. And we weren't really clear exactly, because we're on one of those visions, I think you know what I'm saying, that's kind of a curvy road. You can only see a little way ahead of you.
Uh-huh.
You don't really know where this vision is going to take you, except maybe the next step. It's not a straight vision where you know eventually you're going here. And what we realized after 4 years in Jamaica and working with Jamaica and working with the reggae artists, that now we are doing our second book, and our second in the series. And this book is called A Beauty Path, A Native American Journey into One Love. So what we're doing now, just like we went into Jamaica, into that culture, and said, look, you have a kernel through your music, through your reggae music, through Bob Marley, through your Rastafarian community. You have a kernel of pure one love here that we want to know and we want to bring to the outside world, because if this planet is going to continue, then it's going to continue on a vibration of love. It cannot continue on the vibration of fear that's dominated. And the prophecies state that. Prophecies state we're going to go through this period of Kalanisquatzi that the Hopis call world out of balance. And during that time, people are going to choose. They're either going to choose love or they're going to choose fear. So the prophecy states it, the Cherokee prophecy, the Hopi prophecy states it, you know, the Mayan prophecies all point to this period. So what we did is we said, look, this is a kernel of one love. Let us report on it. Let us mirror it back to you. Let us blow on the ember of your own culture by bringing the message back to you. So now we're going to the Native American cultures and saying, you too have an ember of one love. You're Hopi. We're trained to be peace, people of peace. They were told never to fight, never to take revenge. Your Iroquois people started a democracy, a confederacy, from five tribes that were warring so viciously with each other that it was the worst violence ever known in Native American history, and they made the confederacy long before the white people got here, and we based our democracy on your confederacy.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. I have a message here from 1975 from John Wayne. It comes right out of today's headlines. So you Indian folks who are following the progressive trend in politics, you're following the people that supported slavery. You're following the people that have enslaved you ever since the Civil War. Listen to John Wayne.
You know, it's a funny thing, the Indians now, this AIM group have started something that now they're against me for some reason, but I am the only man in pictures that always gave them their human dignity. I never was in a picture. I never allowed myself at any time to do anything that would take their human dignity away from them, and that to me is the most important thing in a man. I have found that a certain type that calls himself a liberal, and I always thought I was a liberal. I came up terribly surprised one time when I found that I was a right-wing conservative extremist. When I have listened to everybody's point of view that I ever met, and then decide how I should feel. I mean, but this so-called new liberal group, Jesus, they never listen to your point of view, and they make a decision as to what you think, and they're articulate enough and in control of enough of the press to force that image out for the average person. For some reason, maybe it's these pictures, they have not been able to do that with me. In spite of what they say, people have not taken sides that I'm it hasn't affected my career in popularity, let's say. In spite of the fact that they've tried to make it do it. There isn't a hell of a lot to that we can do to change human behavior. We keep making laws to try and change human behavior. You can't do it. I think you can accept it and feel how you would feel in that position. You're being conned into Keynesianism and socialism now. But it isn't going to stop the selfishness of human behavior. It isn't going to stop the greed. If you take $20 and give a dollar to every son of a bitch in a room, and come back a year later, one of the bastards will have most of the money. I mean, it's just human nature, and you're not going to whip it with a lot of laws. I think when you make people conscious, as communication gets better, and you make people conscious of somebody in trouble, starving or something like that, the average person will help. But of course, now they've got so damn many charities, and there's so much professionalism. You know, there's if you have a charity, you hire some professionals to work up the charity. By the time you get the money, you get $4 for the recipient and $400 for the administrators. So I mean, Christ, I think there are people who try to affect a thinking where they know more than some other son of a bitch and try to put a false impression on what human nature is. Christ's sakes, we have proven that we go back to hope at the first opportunity. Just throw out a little fish and bam, they're out there ready to grab it. So we are optimistic. We have to be optimistic. Christ, what else would there be in life if you lose optimism?
The Havasupai have lived in isolation. When we go to the Havasupai, you have to drive to the edge, the remote south rim of the Grand Canyon, and then you have to walk 6 hours or ride a horse 3 hours or a helicopter 10 minutes to get to these people. And they've been down there for millenniums living in peace. There was a place, as you know, in right near you in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Hot Springs, Arkansas was known as Manitonka, the place of peace, because there were 47 springs in Hot Springs, and Native Americans from all the way from the Yucatan all the way up to Alaska would take these journeys to Hot Springs, Arkansas for many reasons. One is they would be healed. Every one of these 47 springs had a different organism, which created a different color and a different healing, and it matched the 47 systems of the body, and there was a Native American elder by each spring who would say, this is the heart spring, this is the skin spring, this is the vision spring. And the tribes would come, and there was one rule. No bad vibes, no weapons, no animosity in the Valley of the Vapors, in the place of peace. And every tribe had their encampment outside the valley. And at night, there would be big tribal councils. People spoke a common sign language, because all the tribes would gather. It was like the United Nations of Native American. They would trade technology, they would trade lore, their legends and their myths. They would trade trading routes and things that they had. Maybe one group had flint, another group had quartz, another group had antlers. So this Valley of the Vapors was a place where for centuries people all over the hemisphere traveled to, and opposing tribes lived in peace. So it proved to us that people can choose peace. And warring tribes would go there together and try to settle their problems. And no one was allowed to bring in bad vibes or weapons. So as you look at this Native American culture, you realize that not so much today, because we know what's happened to Native American, but there was a time when millions of people lived in this continent and designed societies consciously to bring out the best in individuals. They designed societies that honored women. They designed societies where no leader had the right to impose his will on the tribe. They designed societies where the leaders were chosen as the givers, not the takers. Right now, we elect the takers, all those who have amassed enough money and prestige and power to get elected. They would never choose that for a Native American leader. They designed societies that didn't care about materialism. That's why when the white people came, they couldn't understand why had these people not developed technologically. Why didn't they have, you know, carriages and the wheel and you know, oil lamps and all the things that they had in Europe at that time? But the Native Americans were content. They had nothing more than they wanted. They were had cradle-to-grave security. Everyone cared about everybody else. They lived in a paradise. They had no jails. They had no orphanages. They had no armies. They had no taxes. They had no money. And why would you want to develop technology unless you're either seeking protection or comfort or money? So they had consciously designed for millions of people societies that brought out the best in humans. They weren't perfect. Human nature is always human nature. But what we have begun to do is to go into the history and into the present day keepers of the secrets and say, look, the Native Americans was the last continent. You were the last continent to get run over by this commercial system of Babylon. You know, it rolled across Europe and it rolled across Asia and it rolled across even Africa centuries before it got here. North and South America was free of that system of Babylon that began in Babylon, in Sumeria, 7,000 years ago, city-states and commercialism. So that system rolled across the planet. We were the last continent to get hit by it. Native American was the last people to live under the older culture tribal system that brought out the best. And because you were the last, even though you've been absorbed into the system by now, you knew grandparents who knew before the system hit, or great-grandparents. Your information about how that worked is more recent than almost anyone's on the planet. And we take that information now in our new book, The Beauty Path, A Native American Journey into One Love, and explain to the world there was a time when humanity lived sensibly, sustainably, and that prophecy says that we are heading through a period where that time will return. And here are the instructions that they have given us for this period. And the instructions are quite detailed and yet so simple that most people think, well, surely it couldn't be that simple. But the Hopi, which all Native Americans, as you know, defer to Hopi for their spirituality and defer to Hopi for their prophecy. And the Hopi instructions came out in the 1990s after being secret for thousands of years. But the prophecy said that when the gourd of ashes falls, and when they're talking through, and that was the atom bomb, when the gourd of ashes falls and the war happens between the swastika and the rising sun, when people speak through cobwebs, when houses are built in a day, when people fly in the sky, when things are brought back from the moon, and then when the gourd of ashes are dropped, you are to take this information to the house of Micah on the eastern shore where the leaders meet. And as you know, Blue Out of Micah is glass. So you are to take the information to the United Nations, the house of Micah on the eastern shore where the leaders meet, and give this secret information that is secret, must stay in your tribe, in your kivas, must only be known by your tribe until that happens. So after thousands of years, in 1940, they brought the 46, they began to bring the information to the United Nations on four occasions. And finally, in the 1980s, the United Nations let them speak. But, you know, they were poor Hopi Indians that came in town on a bus and wore brogan shoes and came down to the United Nations on a subway. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and when they spoke, there wasn't hardly anybody there to listen.
That's right. So, but then they released the information because the prophecy said, when there's only a few of you that know it, tell the whole world. Now, the prophecy states clearly what to do at this time. The instructions, it says, during Kona Squatsi, each individual will be making their own choice to go into the Creator's path of love or to the materialistic path of fear. And during that period, you are to do a few simple things. You are to have a covenant with the Creator, however you see the Creator to be, in whatever religion you are, make a covenant with the Creator. You are to know your garden, know your water, strive for self-sufficiency, live simply and live peacefully. And those are the core instructions. In other words, to strive towards a self-sufficient life, to not accumulate and get caught in the materialism, to live peacefully with people and devote yourself on your spiritual path, however that may be. So, you know, this information coming from Native American is very, very quality information. It was developed over thousands of years, where their information from Jamaica was only developing over a couple of hundred years at best. So the new book that we're doing now is going with the Native American cultures. We go in and we meet with the healers. We don't always look for the appointed chiefs. We look for the people that are teaching love in those cultures. Those are the healers. And we work with them, with the Hopi Snake Priest, Radford, with Damon and Roland down in Havasupai, people like that, and we work with them. We bring concerts in to bring their message alive again in their cultures, and then we write about it and we send out. I think you're on our newsletter list, aren't you?
Uh-huh. I am.
You are?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, you've seen the pictures that we sent out and everything. So as this developed, we began to realize that we weren't just writing about Jamaica, that we were being sent to go wherever we were led, where a ember of one love was still glowing, to blow on that ember and bring it forward. Our next series might be Aloha, a Hawaiian journey into one love. You know, that's what we thought about perhaps doing next. So what we've begun to recognize is what our mission is to find these kernels of one love at this time in history and bring those out to people and say, if you're at the point now that you yourself are an elder, that you've recognized that love is why we're here and love is what has always been missing, that's created such a painful planet. If you've recognized that, here is other people that understood that too. Here's what they said. Here's what they did. Here's what they sang. Here's how they developed their cultures. Here's information that we're all going to need. And that's kind of the vibration and the mission that we've had.
Outstanding. Do the people in the islands, I know the Bermudans, a lot of them have Cherokee blood. The southernmost K in Bermuda is called Cherokee K, and there a lot of Cherokees were taken into the slave system. But do the people in the Caribbean know they've got Native American blood that are nominally black or look black? Because most blacks have Native American blood.
No, I never heard that. Let me say this: there's a tremendous respect within Jamaica and reggae music for Native Americans. So maybe at an unconscious level, there's something going on. But I haven't heard. That's quite interesting. So a lot of Native Americans were taken to the Caribbean as slaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's 600 or 700 Cherokee descendants on Cherokee K, and of course, you know, over a period of 500 years, you know, everybody gets related to everybody else. So, yeah, there's a lot of Native blood. Fidel Castro's some kind of Caribbean Indian, was. So,
now that's interesting. Do the people in Cherokee K claim their descendancy? Do they honor it and claim it?
Yeah, I believe that's what I understand.
Boy, I'd love to go visit that.
Yep.
Yeah, that may be another place to go visit.
Yeah, it's the southernmost K. Yeah, after the Civil War, there was about 10,000 Cherokees who had fought for the Confederacy that left the United States and went to South America, because they were literally driven off at gunpoint and were not allowed to enroll after the Civil War, had fought on the side of Stand Watie. And there's Cherokees in Mexico that went down there in the late 1700s and never returned. We're from Mexico. Cherokees have migrated back and forth from Mexico several times. Our wampum belts are tied in Mexican seaweed. So, and after they forced us onto our lands in Oklahoma, the Cherokee Nation petitioned the government to leave. They're, you know, they already had a colony set up in Mexico that they could buy with the money that was owed us from the taking of our land in the east. Again, the U.S. government wouldn't let us go. So anyway, it's just a footnote. By the way, have you ever heard of a singing group called Up With People?
No.
I travel with Up With People in 70.
Yeah, that was back in the 60s and 70s.
71, and yeah, all the way up until recently. They started in 65, and they had groups on the road up until 2 or 3 years ago. And
they were bringing like a good Christian message of love forward, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was less denominational and Christian than it was just Brotherhood of Man. It was a universal message of the Brotherhood of Man.
Uh-huh.
But not particularly a religious message, because they felt that would limit the message of the Brotherhood message.
Yeah, and we've done the same thing. In fact, when we were in Jamaica, we were successful in getting Rastafarian reggae artists on the stage with Christian gospel artists, on the stage with Governor General of Jamaica and Elder Rastas together.
Well, who are the Rastas? Is it a religion or?
Well, by the way, before I get on that, let me just tell you, something happened on the news tonight that I thought was a very good sign. The new Pope, the first really public thing he did, went back to his home in Germany, and he went and prayed at a Jewish synagogue.
Good.
And, you know, that's what the world needs to begin to see now, that it's not about one person finding the right religion, you know, that all spiritual paths are valid, that lead back to love and back to the Creator. So I thought that was very good. The Rastas in Jamaica started about the 1930s. They started, what happened was a series of events. Marcus Garvey started to wake up the black population that they were equal. This is in the 1930s. He started a thing in the States and in Jamaica where millions of black people heard his words, that black people were indeed equal. They hadn't been told that, even though they were free by the 1930s. They had still were living under the impression that they were in some way inferior. And then in the 1930s, a second thing happened. For the first time in hundreds of years, a black leader, powerful black leader, Haile Selassie, appeared on the world scene, the emperor of Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. And he was a long-reigning monarch. He was an enlightened person. He was dignified. And this was the first time black people around the world had seen a black leader in modern times, because most black leaders were more tribal leaders. So this was a very powerful impact at the same time. And his name, other than Haile Selassie, his name before that was Rastafari.
I was just getting ready to say, were you aware of that? And are you also aware of one of his other titles was the Lion of Judah? And
yeah,
the
King of Israel, the Lion of Judah, the King of Kings.
Are you aware that when Elizabeth visited him, she kissed his ring, which means he's a senior king to her?
And I think that the King of England or the Prince, one of them, gave him a staff that was the staff of, what was it, the staff of Julia, do you remember? I forget the staff. King of Kings, that gave him the title King of Kings. Yeah.
Well, they have the Jacob's Pillar Stone. It's in the chair in Westminster Abbey.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, what happened then was this group within Jamaica started to live the covenant of the Bible. Don't cut your hair. Don't comb your hair. Don't kill, which to them meant don't eat meat. Don't kill anything, you know, and don't take on Babylon's value system. So they said, let's really claim ourselves as powerful people. We're seeing it come through Garvey. We're seeing it come through through Haile Selassie. But let's go a step further, and let's really live the Nazarene covenant of the Bible. And they moved out to the countryside, where they remain today, many of them. They grew their locks. They smoke herb from the tree of life. Instead, they never touch alcohol. Well, the true Rasta, there's all levels. You know what I mean? Like one of our Rasta friends said, everyone eats a little meat on the way up. You know what I mean?
Right.
Everyone's striving towards that ideal of not killing, not drinking alcohol, living a natural life, growing organic fruits and vegetables.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting
right.
garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond.
Put
it under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
So they began this lifestyle in the hills of Jamaica in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. And by the time Bob Marley came along in the 60s, they were pretty well established as a niche splinter group within the Jamaican culture that Jamaica government didn't like because they looked weird and they smoked too much ganja. But Bob was coming up in the ghettos of Trenchtown, and he was playing slack music, not conscious music. He was called Tuff Gong. He had a gang. He had guns. And Mortimer Plano, one of the elder Rastas of Jamaica, and some of the other Rastas went to Bob and said, Bob, your music is meant to bring people home to love, to peace and love. Don't use your music to take people astray like this. And he got it. He understood what they were saying, and he devoted his life to bring forward a message of peace and love and justice, standing up for your rights. So he then propelled the movement because as he got so famous, I mean, to give you an idea of his fame, which I'm sure you're aware of, but some of your listeners may not be, is this: Bob's been dead 23 years. This Christmas, only one person on the planet outsold Bob, and that was Jimmy Buffett,
yeah.
Which is blues music.
And he's a fan of
Bob Marley's.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, you know, what happened then is Bob became so huge worldwide before and after his death, and he brought Rastafari to the world. And we begin to believe that this reggae music and the Rastafarians are the tribal drummers. You know, in ancient times when they would have a tribal gathering, you couldn't just be the chief or the elders and call the tribe in. You had to get a drummer going. And the drummer had his own personal style, and he'd start drumming in the village center. And people would hear the drum, and no party was going to happen. And they'd come in, and they'd drum, and they'd dance for a couple of hours until their hearts was open. And then the chief and the elders would address the tribe. And every drummer was honored like royalty. They buried him with his drum. Well, we believe that there is now a global tribe of people waking up to who we really are. and that the tribal drummers is reggae music. And these are the conscious reggae artists, this not the dancehall reggae that's coming out now, but this true culture, conscious reggae music is one of maybe many, maybe there's even a gospel tribal drum that is calling the people together and saying, we're awakening now. People are remembering who we are, why we were sent here. And in a way, we never left. In other words, does the Creator even know we're on this planet? If my child is laying on this couch with a fever and I can see she's having bad dreams, I don't really need to know what the dreams are, because I know she's going to wake up and realize she never left home. She's always been safe on the couch with her mother and father around. Well, it may be the same way with us, that we've never left home. We've just taken this detour into fear, this dream into fear of separation and thinking we're separate from each other and from the Creator and from the planet and from the animals. And out of that 6 billion of us creating that dream, you get, ta-da, modern life,
Yep. Which
looks more bizarre every day.
Oh, yeah.
And that one day you start to wake up and you go, that's not who I am. That's not who anybody is. We are beings sent, totally enlightened beings, dreaming this dream, sent here to bless and heal with our love. And I'm waking up and I see someone across the yard, they're waking up, and I see someone over in that yard and they seem to be waking up. And now let's see if we can wake up our brothers and sisters that are sleeping, because for the most part, it's not a good dream. So you try to reach out to your brothers and sisters, say, hey, it's not about sex. It's not about possessions. It's not about power. It's not about accomplishments. It's not about belonging, even. It's not about any of the stuff that modern culture is telling you about. And you're going to go, and it's really a painful life if you go that way. You may get a lot of money. You may have your name in lights, but you're not going to find what you're looking for. And we can, and the world is strewn with those situations, with people that are publicly accomplished and privately anguished.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, and to say to people, that's the wrong road. It doesn't mean that you can't have a great relationship. It doesn't mean that you can't meet your, that you shouldn't make enough money to live comfortably. We're not saying that. We're saying, remember that that's just what you do on your path home. So as you, what happens is as we wake up, we look to say, let me help others wake up, and let's help each other wake up. And for Julia and I, that has been our journey through these cultures and through our books, is to help wake ourselves up, because when you go out and do this, you're confronted with all of your own places where you're unable to love unconditionally, where I'm still judgmental, where I still get angry, where I still get disappointed, where I still don't come from love. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I see it every day. I'll forget what I'm talking to you about before I go to bed tonight and go unconscious again. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So it's a process, and so that's what we're doing, and we're working now with lots of people on the planet, especially in this country and in Jamaica, that are aware of that same thing, and they're working together. And they're aware of the prophecies talked about that.
And by the way, if you have another phone in the house, y'all are coming through loud and clear. And if you want to put your wife on at the same time, you're welcome to, or just hand her, you know, whatever you feel like doing is fine.
Okay, Julia, whenever you feel moved to give me a signal, and I'll shut up and let you.
I'm hearing this message
echo. I don't think it'll echo now. Can you hear us, Blue Otter?
Or are you both on the phone?
Yeah.
Yeah, just speak up as loud as you can.
Good.
Okay, this is working?
Yeah, Robert, maybe you better hang up. I guess there's quite a bit of drop in volume, so maybe you better hang yours up, just let her talk. Okay, how's that sound now? Go ahead.
I'm not ready to say anything yet.
Okay.
That's right, when my wife's ready to talk, she talks.
Okay, well, whenever she's ready. Yeah, there was quite a drop in voice. Sometimes it happens with phones in the house, so, because of voltage drop. But what's your personal, you know, where were you born and raised, you know, about your parents, from your name? I'm thinking, well, if you're white, I was thinking maybe Eastern Europe, Roskind.
Hey, not bad. Very good, Blue Otter.
Possibly Ashkenazim?
Yeah, I tell you, right on there. You got it. You nailed it. I mean, Blue Otter, I'd have to say, I don't know, maybe a, I don't know, in a creek outside of the Ozarks.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I was, in this lifetime, I was raised as a, in a Jewish community in Atlanta, went to a Catholic school, was raised by a black woman, and, you know, it was a New York Jew raised in the South by a black woman and went to a Catholic school.
So were you people, Reformed, conservative, or Orthodox Jew? Or?
Well, we were conservative only because it was socially what was needed, but the truth
right.
of it was, is the Jewish community, I was born in 47, the Jewish community in the 40s and 50s were seriously debating whether God existed.
Yeah.
You know, after the Holocaust, even my rabbi, I could tell it. So I could see that spirituality within the Jewish community was in deep question.
Oh, yeah.
People just didn't know how to say God existed and let the Holocaust happen. But, you know, it was a good, stable upbringing. It was in Atlanta, it was a good, high-functioning community. My parents were good, solid people. It was a loving household. They hired a black woman to come in and raise my sister and I for 16 years. She was my roommate for many years, and she went to Dr. Martin Luther King Sr.'s church. And when I was a teenager, I traveled and befriended Otis Redding and went with him.
I didn't
have the typical life.
Then I
became a hippie. I've written a book called The Memoirs of an Ex-Hippie. And on my first acid trip, I accidentally ingested what I thought was just one or two hits of LSD, but it was pure surgical, pure research LSD.
Oh, my gosh.
50 hits. I just thought it was like vodka. I didn't know
oh
I drank it like vodka. And that started a three-day journey that when I came down, I realized that I wasn't just a good little Jewish kid from Atlanta.
Did you know Reverend Borders at the Wheat Street Baptist Church?
No, uh-uh.
He was the second biggest black church in Atlanta. We performed there in 72, and I met Coretta, and by the way, she had a stroke the day before yesterday, and everybody
saw that.
Prayers. But anyway, all the guys in the group had stage work to do, and my job was to set up the big lights behind the stage that showing up on a big sheet that we would do a light show on. And anyway, this little black kid tapped me on the show one day and on the shoulder and asked me what I was doing, and he was, you know, wearing a long trench coat. Well, that was Martin Luther King III, you know, the little 14-year-old kid, you know, and I was like 60, and so Atlanta was cool. We were there, Lockheed was rolling out the L-1011, of course they had a big plant there, and I remember we did several shows at that huge auditorium that they had, and
in downtown.
Yeah, beautiful, the most beautiful house that we, other than Carnegie Hall, that we ever played in.
Yeah, one of those old beautiful brick.
We were there for 3 weeks. We performed at all of the high schools and quite a few of the junior highs. We did 30.
It's funny because we have the same roots here. You were bringing a musical message of one love into the schools as well.
Where were you in 72?
In 72, I was on a commune in Oregon.
Okay, so you were in school there,
I graduated college in 69, and I was 7 years. I lived in a school bus between Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and California and Oregon.
Well, you know, you got a lot of the same. You came from the same rootstock as Robert Ghostwolf. He came up on Long Island and started his journey, and you know, he ended up being roommates with the famous beat poet.
Ferlinghetti or Ginsberg?
No. Well, the one that founded the whole movement, his name just escapes me right now. And then it started visiting the Hopi elders in the late 60s. And you guys came out, so you're older than I am. You came out of an amazing time. We got a book today called How to Grow More Vegetables Than You Ever Imagined on Less Land Than You Could Imagine. And, you know, it was written by, you know, guess what, some old hippies. I mean, it's just amazing what came out of the hippie movement. And, you know, including, did you ever get a chance to visit Grandfather Rolling Thunder down in Carlin, Nevada?
No, I saw him speak once in California. And actually, my book, Memoirs of an Ex-Hippie, chronicles that period. And what the book chronicles, my own journey through the commune system and through the West Coast and Tassajara Hot Springs and Esalen Institute. But it really shows that a whole generation asked one question: is there a better way?
Yep.
Is there a better way for love and war? Is there a better way to die? Is there a better way to be born? Is there a better way to grow food? Is there a better way to create energy? And from that, we found out, yes, there's hospice, there's natural childbirth, there's organic food, there's solar energy, there's wind energy, there's peace instead of war. You know, there's, you know, equality for women and men. So we found that there was a better way for everything, and now that is in the society, though a lot of it is not embraced. I mean, you and I remember times you couldn't find, there were no health food stores. There was no concept of health food.
No.
And you could not go into a bookstore and find a self-help section, which is the biggest section now. There was no self-help. If you were having emotional troubles, you go to a psychiatrist.
That's right.
Or you take a chemical. There was no conscious books. There was no way to find truth about spirituality. There was no spiritual section in a bookstore. There were no Marianne Williamsons and Deepak Chopras out there. So now, for those that want it, it's there. It's established. If you want to question traditional religion, there's many books of truth out there. If you want to find a better way to take care of your body, there's yoga, there's meditation, there's organic food for your mind. You know, there's self-help, there's 12-step programs. If you want to die naturally, if you want to be born naturally. So it's there. If you want to create sustainable energy through solar, through wind, through biomass, through, you know, hydro gardening, all that kind of stuff. That generation established it. It's there, and it's going to be there when it's needed, and that we're coming at a time when it's needed. I mean, 2 years from now, solar energy may be thriving because paying for electricity may be that painful. The only reason it doesn't thrive now is it's more expensive. Well, we're hitting a time where that's going to tip the other way, and then you're going to see solar energy everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Enough people are tired of getting cancer, they're going to finally get that it's all the stuff that's in the food, and you're going to see organic foods going more popular. So that we were meant to be, our generation was meant to be that beachhead, to establish that in the consciousness of the planet and have it there and viable when it's needed. And I think that time, prophecy says that time is coming.
Well, that was, your generation fulfilled at least one major Hopi prophecy, the grandchildren of the whites that, you know, that had killed so many Indians in the Indian Wars would want to come and be taught. But the difficult thing that you guys faced was that, well, it's kind of the same thing that happened in South Africa only 100 years later. The saying in South Africa years ago, a long time ago, was when the whites have turned from hating us, well, we have turned from loving them. And so native people, some of them embraced you, some of them rejected you outright and still do. Some of them are very hateful about it. And the ones that did embrace you and teach you are on the F list of quite a few of them that are the other ones that don't appreciate the fact that they did, because they're still holding on to hatred and fear, and they've learned white ways better than whites ever. You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, and, you know, the peacemaker, the Iroquois peacemaker who brought the five tribes together and made peace there, Daganoweda was his name, but he's referred to as the peacemaker. Mm-hmm. He said, you must stop telling the old stories or the wars will never end. I mean, my wife is Irish. She could hate the English for what they did to Ireland. I'm Jewish. I could hate any number of countries. You know, you may be Native American. You may be black. It's a human condition. Let me tell you, an unconscious white slave owner would just as soon sell a white slave as a black slave. He doesn't care. And when the slaves got freed in Jamaica in the U.S., they went and owned slaves. Ex-slaves owned slaves.
Cherokees owned.
Native Americans owned slaves. So this is a two-legged condition. It's not about being black or white. I've seen give me an idea how you just never know where Healer was. You know, I mentioned to you we just did 7 concerts up in Iroquois.
Mm-hmm.
And we were invited up there by people who did peace concerts up there, Onondaga Lake Festival, things like that. The most conscious healer we met had a gun on his hip and a badge on his chest.
Yeah.
And he was a program director at the penal institution we were at, and he was the most loving guy. And when I stood in front of that audience of inmates and said, you know, I just talked to Captain John, and he said in his book, because this was a detention center where people are waiting to go to tribe, I said, when I talked to Captain John, he told me as far as he was concerned, every person in this detention center was innocent until proven guilty, and they deserve respect, and they deserve kindness.
What an attitude.
The whole auditorium erupted in applause.
What an attitude.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of 5 exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Yeah, and this is an inmate applauding a guard. So it's not a racial thing, but it's understandable how if your foreparents were treated the way Jews, Irish, blacks, Indians, gays, women. Women, why not women? They ought to be pissed at everybody. Every culture doesn't give women full equality. So if we're going to stay stuck in that, and what we do is because we come into a black culture, we come into Native American culture, as you say, there are many people that don't want to talk to someone like Julia and I. Well, that's great because it weeds them out. We're only looking for the ones that have risen above it. We're looking for the ones that have risen above the anger to express this love. So when we come in, and if you look, if you see me, like I was looking at the couple that you had this week on your site.
Uh-huh.
You know, the guy with the long white hair?
Gardos, uh-huh.
Yeah,
Moira.
Yeah. Well, I don't look like that. I look like I just stepped off the golf course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and see, that's good because it says if you can deal with me, if you're a Rastafarian, if you're a reggae artist, if you're a Native American, and you're willing to open your heart because you see where I'm coming from, you're the kind of wisdom I want. If you distrust me, if you're angry at me, why should I talk to a white man? You know, why should I give you anything? Then that's not the wisdom that the world needs right now. They don't need to hear from that person. We can hear from that person every day when we cut on the news, that voice of anger, understandable anger.
Yep.
You know, so we kind of let it qualify. So when we go into these reservations, when we go into the hills of Jamaica, we know the person that we're looking to find there will look at us and say, I'm so glad you're trying to help get love going in the planet. That's what I'm trying to do. And I've seen many people with long dreads, even eating organic food, who are still angry. And I've seen Native Americans who are doing sun dances and sweat lodges, and they're still angry. And they, you know, this is all laid out in the Iroquois epic. Are you familiar with the epic about Daganoweda and the peacemaker?
I sure am. Sure.
But as you know, in that, when the peacemaker, who was a virgin birth, very clear thinker, came to bring peace to the tribes, one of the first people he encountered was Hiawatha. Hiawatha had had his family killed by a very vicious Onondaga chief, and he had become a cannibal, and he had become very hateful, understandably so. His daughters and wife were killed. And what Daganoweda, the peacemaker, got on top of his lodge when he was gone, when Hiawatha was gone, and Hiawatha comes back, and he's dragging a body, and he's killed a warrior, and he's going to eat him. And he cuts up the body and starts to throw it in the kettle, and Daganoweda, the peacemaker, is looking in through the smoke hole above, and his face is reflected in the kettle. And Hiawatha thinks it's his own face, and he instantly realizes he's supposed to be a man of love and peace. He sees this wonderful love and peace in the peacemaker's face in the kettle, and he thinks it's his own, and he goes outside and he starts to cry because he's done horrible things. And he realizes he should have been a man of love. Well, that's the condition of the angry people that are out there now. They're well-intended people. Their hearts have been ripped open by what's happened to them, to their foreparents, by their families being killed, by whatever. And they become angry themselves. And often when you come in and show a face of peace, they quickly remember, yes, it's about peace. Now, there was another guy, the Tatadejo, who had killed Hiawatha's family. They had to go to the Tatadejo years and years, over and over again, to get him to come on to the Confederacy of the Iroquois Nation. He was the last chief out of 50 chiefs to get it, because his anger was so deep that it took that many times. So some people get it immediately, and some people don't get it for many, many times. And the actual first person that embraced the peacemaker's message of peace was Jekonsasay, a woman. She wasn't even angry. She was in a neutral village, and she sold food or traded food to all the warriors. She had no bitterness whatsoever. But there was one thing she was missing. She made her living off of the warriors, and more importantly, she listened with enthusiasm to their warlike tales, and in essence, egg them on to do more war.
Mm.
So there's another person that is out there, and that is the person who, when someone comes and is angry at somebody else, rather than lead them out of that anger and say, look, you need to find a peaceful place in your heart, you may never need to see that person again, you may never need to be married to them or work for them or whatever, but you need to find peace in your heart. Instead, they egg them on, yeah, you don't let them do that again. Oh, I don't blame you for doing that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so there are three levels that people go through and that each one of us go through weekly. There's the Tatadejo, the vicious one who wants revenge, who's angry and wants revenge. There's the Hiawatha in us that's been hurt by the darts of the world and have become embittered ourselves and angry and hating George Bush and Blair and white people or whoever. And then there's the Jekonsaseys, who have gone even past bitterness but still don't claim themselves as a teacher of love. And then the final one is who we really are, and that's the peacemaker, the one who sees that it's all about love. When we went to do the Iroquois concerts 2 weeks ago, we encountered all those different personalities in the 7 days we were there.
Mm-hmm.
We encountered a Tatadejo guy.
Yep.
We encountered a Jekonsasay woman. We encountered many Hiawathas. But what was funny, Blue Otter, was we encountered it within ourselves.
Yep.
In the grueling week that we were there, I watched myself go through all those different vibrations.
Yep.
You know, so again, in Native America, they left us this wonderful, true epic. It's a true epic of how their Iroquois Nation was formed. And in this epic is everything we need to know. And what's funny is Leon Shenandoah, who is the past leader, as you know, of Iroquois Nation, said that the peacemaker said, I brought the same message across the great water, but they nailed me to a tree. And they didn't listen to the instructions and didn't let me finish. And so what is being said is that the same entity that was Jesus was the same entity that was the peacemaker.
Well, you know, the Cree say that he visited them, but he also had his brother James with him. And the now this is really interesting because the this is the Cree in Canada. The Kabbalists claim that there are 48 people on Earth at any one time, which is an interesting number, because there's 49 plus one on Tadaho's staff, and that was the staff that Leon Shenandoah had. But there are 48 people that can travel between the old world and the new world, more or less.
On the planet at any one time?
Right, and Mad Bear Anderson was one of these. Mad Bear was a Tuscarora that lived up around Niagara that started the movement back in the 50s and in early 60s. He was a merchant mariner and went all over the world, and he planted the seeds by visiting the elders in North and South America and the Far East and the Middle East, and started bringing these people together. And a really interesting story. But there's one thing I want you to know about Daganoweda. You're familiar, as a Hebrew, you're familiar with the Nephilim, the fallen angels?
No, uh-uh.
Well, the story in the Tanakh, you know, talks about these Nephilim, these sons of God that fell from heaven, and they were blamed for a lot of misdeeds. Their offspring were giants, and the offspring were known to have a lot of times six fingers, six toes, double row of teeth. Well, when I heard that, I just about had a fit, because I knew from my reading of the book The White Roots of Peace, which was the authorized story of the Great Law.
Yeah, the Daganoweda had a double row.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, okay, you read the book. Okay, so you're,
yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Because King David had a group of these guys that weren't evil. They were known as the Gibberim. And that's where we get the word gibberish from, because these guys were big and they were loyal to him. And they made sounds, apparently because they had the double row of teeth, they made sounds that other humans couldn't make. So I really kind of wondered about who the peacemaker was.
You know, another thing that I thought about is the Mormons believe that Jesus appeared to Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And John Smith was from Iroquois Nation, Upper New York State.
Yeah,
he found the golden tablets on Iroquois Nation land.
He did.
You know, so I was wondering if maybe there wasn't some truth to that.
Well, let me tell you what happened. He found those plates up near Palmyra, New York, up in the Finger Lakes region. But the Mormons were told that they were supposed to use the red men as their example. And Joseph Smith, the first couple of missionaries that he sent out to take the Book of Mormon, he sent them from somewhere in New York to Independence. His instructions were to go to Indian Nation, which was just across the river from Kansas City, and give the Book of Mormon to the Indians. Because the Book of Mormon is addressed to the Indians. The Book of Mormon says it was to be given to the Indians, and they were supposed to build up their spirituality, their church. Well, the two missionaries got waylaid, and it was winter. They were in waist-deep snow. They ended up, you know, being hosted by some white families, and that's how the church got started. They really were... And the other story was, you find out years later that... the Nez Perce knew the book was coming. They sent some warriors to that area, and when the book didn't appear, they crossed the river and went to Kansas City, or went to St. Louis, and somebody gave them a Bible. So there was a miscarriage right there. But
where are all those tablets now?
Well, I'll get to that. But the interesting story is Joseph Smith was told that if he lived to be 85 years old, he would again see Jesus. You see the face of Jesus, and because he had been visited, you know, during this period when he was translating the Book of Mormon plates. Well, that was a prophecy that was written down, and there's another prophecy in the Book of Mormon says that if the Gentiles sinned against the message that was in the Book of Mormon, that the message would be taken away from them and given to the Indians. And in the 1880s, the Mormons were so tired of being hounded and, you know, put upon by the United States government, because when they left in the 1840s, they left the United States, right in 1847, and then they got sucked into the Mexican-American War, and then shortly after the time they got to Salt Lake, that area that was Mexico became America again. But anyway, long story made short, Brigham Young tried to jumpstart these people to live the all things common tribal lifestyle. They got sidetracked. They became worldly. And then in 1890, they publicly came out and said, look, we're not going to try to do this all things common thing anymore. And they also rejected polygamy, which is really an aberration. But they went back on their covenant in 1890. But in 1889, Jesus started visiting the Indians in Walker Lake, Nevada. And then you start getting the stories over the telegraph lines, because it was a military reservation at that time, of Jesus visiting Wovoka talking about the fact that, and also Porcupine and Short Bull, and a lot of other Indians that had converged from all over North and South America there to meet Jesus. Jesus arrives in a donut-shaped orange vehicle, an invisible stairway comes out of it, and he comes down and teaches them, tells them that after they shake hands with him, they can see him anytime they want to in their sleep. And then the ghost, he gave him a dance called the Dance of Welcome, but by the time that message got to Sitting Bull, it was twisted a little bit. They started praying for the death of the whites instead of just...
Yeah, living all
yeah.
together.
Yeah, all, yeah, basically all they're supposed to do is stop fighting amongst each other, clean up their act, and not be so confrontational with the whites. So that the ghost dance movement was an aberration. But in the 1930s, another identical messenger comes to the Tanna Islanders in the Tahitian chain, and they just called him John Frum. If Joseph Smith had lived, he was going to the Rocky Mountains, and he was called back, and he knew he was going to be martyred, but that's where he was headed. So if he'd lived till 1890 instead of being martyred in the 1840s, he would have again seen Jesus. And his first plural wife wrote a letter to the newspapers in Salt Lake after the Walker Lake incident, calling to the attention that the prophecy had been fulfilled and that the gospel had been taken from them and given to the Indians, just like it said in the Book of Mormon. Now, the plates themselves, there was a seer stone. A lot of people think that Joseph used the Urim and Thummim to translate it, but there was actually a seer stone. You have to have a stone to be called a seer, but he used a stone in the bottom of a hat. He put the stone in the bottom of a hat, stuck his face in the hat, and the words would appear one at a time, and until they were written down properly, that word didn't disappear. So then after the Book of Mormon was translated, it was taken back by the angel Moroni to wherever they take stuff like that, into the ether. But, you know, things, stories like this sound far-fetched, but, you know, Tom Blue Wolf, we interviewed him last August. He said that the Rain Queen contacted him because the story that she told him was that his ancestors, just prior to the Trail of Tears, had vouchsafed for safekeeping some sacred songs in the spirit world that were later to be released when the time was right. And she was knocking around in the spirit world one day, ran into the songs, was told who they belonged to, was told the name, address, and telephone number, who to contact. You know, see, we're talking about a woman who the Zulu kings feared because of her spirituality. lives in South Africa. The old Rain Queen passed away, and there is a new Rain Queen now. So there's some wild things that go on in the spirit world. It's really, really interesting. But that's a little aside about some of the things that you were. Some more stories you can tell.
Yeah, and actually some of those I'll pursue. I mean, it's not if people think it's absurd that Christ may have appeared to Native Americans, why is that any more absurd than Christ appearing to ancient Jews?
Well,
I mean,
they...
You know, and if Christ is immortal, surely he could choose to die and come back. Or, you know, so it's only in our culture that we would think that Christ would only appear that one time because we've been raised in a Christian culture.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting
right.
garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like
dehydrated.
Good. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond. Put it under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet, all for $9.99, formerly priced at $29.99. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
You want to get an edge on turning back the clock with just a few pills? Who doesn't? Well, it's no longer science fiction, but science possibility, a potential breakthrough. As I found out firsthand, there may be a way to erase years, at least inside my body. Granted, it's down the road, but some scientists are wondering if a new pill I took might offer a very long life.
It may not look like the Fountain of Youth, but inside this nondescript building, I'm about to become part of an exciting experiment, a kind of guinea pig.
Dr. McCord, okay.
I'm here at the University of Colorado in Denver to meet Dr. Joe McCord, a world-renowned scientist.
This is pretty exciting stuff you're finding, huh?
It is. We're very excited about it.
His latest research could very well unravel the mystery of aging itself. And his decades of experiments may have the potential of adding years to people's lives and possibly prevent chronic diseases like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. It all centers around this small yellow pill, and for me, it begins with a blood test.
There we go.
It wouldn't be the first time I've given blood for this company.
They want to check my levels of something called T-bars, which is a rough indicator of a person's actual age. T-bars can identify a condition known as oxidative stress, a kind of measure of the wear and tear on our bodies. Oxidative stress, like the rusting of an engine, is not a good thing.
Bad for the body.
Leading to disease.
Leading to disease and leading to malfunction and, importantly, leading to what we call aging. It is a slow progression of increasing oxidative stress. That's the main characteristic biochemically of the aging process.
The problem of aging begins with the very food we eat to give us energy. As our cells burn that food, they also release toxic chemicals. Those chemicals, you may know them as free radicals, react with all the components of our cells, literally bombarding them millions of times per second, damaging all our cells. The result? Oxidative stress. And we all have it. The body fights back with a system of defenses. It makes two antioxidant enzymes, catalase and SOD, whose job is to gobble up the free radicals before they can harm our cells.
So, doctor, how often do I take these?
And so, here I go. With that swallow, I've just become part of a potentially landmark scientific experiment.
Doesn't taste bad.
It's called Protandim, and tests on both mice and humans have already shown that it revs up the manufacture of those good enzymes in our bodies. More enzymes, fewer free radicals to harm us. Whether that will lead to longer life is still unknown. Experiments to see if mice live longer are about to get underway, but it's a tantalizing theory.
Right now, all we know is that this preparation decreases oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is not a disease, just like aging is not in itself a disease, but it's something that accompanies and is attached to many disease processes. So you can see the age-related...
Normally, oxidative stress, measured by those T-bars, increases with age. But in Dr. McCord's tests, taking just one pill of Protandim a day reversed that trend for everyone at every age, even for an 80-year-old.
They all are reduced to the level of oxidative stress that one would expect, frankly, in a newborn or a very young child.
Back to the oxidative stress levels of a child? It sounds too good to be true. Will Protandim work on me?
The scientific evidence is there. The pieces seem to make sense. The question is, does this translate into something that humans can take advantage of?
And so, ancient Eastern healing and modern Western medicine may soon be working together. High oxidative stress is associated with more than aging. It's been linked to hundreds of illnesses.
It's at the very center of many diseases. Liver disease, diabetes, emphysema, asthma. I've studied all of these. Strokes, heart attacks.
Even mental disease.
Yes.
Depression?
Alzheimer's disease, depression.
Dr. James Crapo with the National Jewish Medical Center in Denver is also researching Protandim for the company.
Are you saying that this could be a cure-all?
You're looking at something that will have a small impact, but an important impact.
We make no claims about curing any disease or preventing any disease. We hope that when enough studies are done, perhaps such claims might be able to be made in the future.
Clinical studies to assess Protandim in both diabetes and heart disease should start in 3 to 4 months. But what about my progress? After nearly 2 weeks now, it's time to get my results. Dr. McCord calculates the numbers. The result? My level of oxidative stress has declined dramatically.
45%. That's excellent.
Just look at where I fall on the graph, before and after.
Which, if extrapolated back, is the level you would see in a newborn baby.
Have we turned back the clock? Well, maybe not on the outside, but deep inside, within my cells, yes indeed.
Would you suggest I keep taking this supplement?
I would. I can't guarantee it's going to extend your life. I can't guarantee it's going to eliminate any diseases or cure any diseases.
But we do know that oxidative stress is part of those disease processes. And I don't want to wait until I'm 80 years old and find out that I should have taken it.
For more, go to our website at abcnews.com.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Major universities and government agencies initiated and continue self-funded studies following the ABC Primetime Investigative Report you just viewed that originally aired in 2005. These studies continue to reveal more scientific evidence about Protandim's unique benefits. They are published in major scientific and medical journals. The next video will bring you up to date.
Developed after 40 years of research and exclusively for LifeVantage, Protandim is a true scientific breakthrough in anti-aging. Protandim has been reported on ABC, NBC, and PBS, featured in the Wall Street Journal, and described in CNN Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta's book, Chasing Life, The Quest for Immortality. Protandim's creator, Dr. Joe McCord, is a world-renowned scientist and a pioneer in free radical biology. Dr. McCord is the discoverer of the key anti-aging enzyme, superoxide dismutase. His role in the discovery is so significant, the enzyme is measured in McCord units. For Dr. McCord's discovery of superoxide dismutase and his contributions in free radical biology, he was awarded the Elliott Cresson Medal. This medal is awarded to distinguished inventors and scientists, putting Dr. McCord in the same company as Pierre and Marie Curie, Alexander Graham Bell, Orville Wright, and Henry Ford. Dr. Joe McCord has devoted his life's work to the study of free radicals, their role in aging, and the many problems associated with aging. Consumers spend billions every year on antioxidants in the form of food and supplements, hoping to reduce these free radicals. But antioxidants from these sources can only eliminate one free radical for every one antioxidant molecule you consume. Protandim is scientifically proven to slow cellular damage caused by free radicals. Taking one Protandim one time per day for 30 days turns on these anti-aging enzymes in your body. Your own enzymes eliminate free radicals at a rate of 1 million to 1.
I think any other supplements that are designed to be antioxidant supplements probably are no longer needed because Protandim solves that problem in a much more effective way.
Protandim is a breakthrough poised to revolutionize the anti-aging industry. It is an entirely new and scientifically validated way to fight aging, reducing your oxidative stress levels to that of a 20-year-old after just 30 days.
We found, as many other scientists had documented, that there is a progressive increase in T-bars in your blood the older you get. When these same people took Protandim for 30 days, the age-dependent increase in lipid peroxidation was completely eliminated. After Protandim, we could no longer distinguish the 80-year-old from the 20-year-old.
Protandim is protected by 3 U.S. patents. Universities around the world continue to initiate and fund their own studies of Protandim and to evaluate how this anti-aging breakthrough can prevent and improve many of the hundreds of problems associated with aging.
Many academic scientists at a number of universities have begun studying Protandim because it represents a new tool. It represents a way of reducing oxidative stress that wasn't available before. There simply was not a good way of doing what Protandim does. Protandim interacts with the DNA in your cells and causes the cells to make more of a set of genes called survival genes. The ingredients in Protandim were actually selected because they are largely metabolized by the liver, which does not interfere with most prescription drugs, which are generally metabolized by the kidneys. So the general answer to that is yes, it is safe. The immediate benefits of Protandim are within several days, the biochemical markers of oxidative stress begin to decrease. And while these are immediate improvements, you may not sense that these things are happening, just as you can't sense what your cholesterol level is, if it's high or low. But nonetheless, these benefits start happening within days of taking Protandim. The advantages to taking Protandim in the long term are that it protects your body from the relentless progression of free radical damage as we age. The anti-aging aspect of Protandim is one that accumulates over time. So the longer you take it, the more protection you will sustain. Missing a dose of Protandim is not a big problem. It takes about 2 weeks for the effects to go away. So if you miss it for 2 weeks, you're pretty much back to where you started from.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Good afternoon. These are on, I presume. I'd like to talk to you today, and do I have control of these slides, or is I do? Okay. Let's get through these really quick, because this is just because you have to get CMEs, and I have to tell you that I am on the Speakers Bureau for GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, and also a nutritional consultant for an HIV nutritional company named Biosource Therapeutics, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about today. What I'd like to talk to you about is something that I find thoroughly fascinating. It is glutathione. It is one of the four endogenous antioxidants, and it is one that I must admit, despite 80,000 published articles in the English literature, through medical school, internship, residency, fellowship, and a fairly long time in academic medicine, I knew nothing about. It is a very interesting molecule because it exists in an accelerated or increased energy state. The energy state is, or increased energy state, is caused by the fact that it's got a free sulfhydryl group and therefore can easily donate the hydrogen to an electron and therefore quench a free radical. Now, let me tell you, because I think it's important, and it is a little bit of a divergence, but I learned about glutathione because of something that you probably all have seen in your practice, and that is a low uric acid. Now, when I was in medical school and when I was a professor of oncology, the only thing I knew about uric acid is when you had a kid that you were going to treat for leukemia, you put him on allopurinol to keep the uric acid down. I knew nothing about uric acid being low, except it kept appearing, and it appeared in about 20% of my patients, and that just didn't make sense. So I finally went into PubMed, and after stumbling around for a long time, I found out that uric acid is the last antioxidant your body uses when it's run out of everything else. When it's run out of gas, okay, it uses uric acid. Interesting. So if that's the last, the question then, what was the first? And that is where I got into glutathione. I've been coming to some of these meetings for a while, and glutathione is very important for a number of things, not all of which I'm going to go into today. But in point of fact, it has a great deal to do with not only well-being, okay, but aging well, or if you will, retarding the aging process. So I think it's very applicable. I'd like to, at the risk of repeating things that you already know, go over some of the things that glutathione is important about. Alone in the antioxidant world, okay, every other antioxidant, when it becomes oxidized, becomes itself a free radical. Glutathione doesn't. It actually recycles other antioxidants. In fact, the body considers it so important that up to 6% of the entire ATP expenditure or energy expenditure of the body may be used to synthesize and optimize glutathione levels. That's pretty impressive, 6% of the entire energy output of the body. It is also the only non-enzyme antioxidant that doesn't become a free radical, and in fact has a very interesting corollary when it becomes oxidized, because what happens is it complexes to another spent glutathione molecule, and the compound then becomes GSSG, and GSSG has been shown in animal studies at least to promote and induce delta wave sleep. We all know the importance of that in terms of the aging process, so this, even in its used up form, functions as a very useful product. It not only functions as an antioxidant itself, but alone again in the world of antioxidants, it is an absolutely essential component of antioxidant enzymes, namely glutathione peroxidase, and most importantly, the glutathione transferases. And I bring that up because glutathione transferase abnormalities have now been associated with virtually every cancer known to man, and probably with a lot more than that. And therefore, by promoting the production of glutathione transferases through improving glutathione, we may be doing even more than I'm able to talk about right now. In addition, if that were not enough, let's keep going. It's a chelator. In fact, it's 50% as effective as oral chelation in getting rid of mercury. It has an effect on other heavy metals, but they're not as pronounced as mercury, and mercury is pretty ubiquitous in an environment, so it kind of comes as a freebie. And it detoxifies organic pollutants, perhaps the best known one of which is the two-carbon fragment that we know as alcohol. And in fact, without glutathione, you ultimately get a hangover because you stop the process at acetaldehyde, which is phase one detox, and that in itself is a free radical, and obviously many of us may have felt the effects of that if we didn't have enough glutathione. Now, why is it important in aging? Well, these are old data, and I think they're probably not as robust as they should be, but I'll give you what is available now. Glutathione levels decrease with age. The data would suggest it's 1% a year beginning in the 20s. I think that's too little, too late, but that's only my opinion right now. I haven't proved it. There are some very interesting things, though. Age-matched normals, okay, reveal that anybody at, say, 45 who's had his first heart attack or has asthma or whatever other disease you want to use has a lower glutathione level than somebody of that age who's well. So disease causes decrease in glutathione and an accelerated decrease compared to normals. Glutathione happens to be, and this is perhaps the take-home message, it's the major protector of mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondrial DNA is that DNA within the cells that's responsible, if you will, for the electron transport chain that produces every bit of energy in your body. And we know from pathologic data that if you take a biopsy from a 90-year-old and compare it to a biopsy in a 5-year-old, the mitochondrial DNA in the 90-year-old is only 5% normal compared to the 5-year-old. So obviously we destroy our mitochondrial DNA, we destroy our energy, and we age. Maintenance of normal mitochondrial DNA is directly correlated, and it's got an R value above 9.9, with aging. So the higher your glutathione, the less you age. And I think
it's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Thank you. Let the truth